Welcome back to Game. I'm your host and your coaching teammate, Shauna Griffiths. And I am so grateful to have you here with me today for a conversation with an impactful leader. If you're new to the show, know that every episode is designed to help you take your leadership game to the next level. You see, I believe that leadership is a sport and that each of us can choose the mindset and the way of a leadership athlete. So what does that mean? That means that you actively choose to put in the work to learn and grow and evolve yourself every day, just like our guests. You choose to be coachable and adaptable and resilient. You choose to courageously and authentically take your own shots and improve yourself along the way. And you choose these things in a way that's similar to the way that high-performing athletes do, hence the name Leadership Athletes. And you can choose to keep tuning into Game Time. Each episode is going to deliver real talk and key takeaways with a diverse, authentic leader who is committed to maximizing their impact and contribution. Which brings me to today's guest, Brian Baslow, my good longtime friend. Hey, Brian, thanks for joining.
Shauna, thanks for having me. I'm so excited for this.
Folks, that may be one of the only times I've ever called him Brian. It's Baslow or Baz, so you'll have to get used to that as we go through this episode. Baz, you're the CEO and owner of Concierge Live. And so, folks, it's a comprehensive, industry-leading ticketing management system. Brian will get into all of that, what that means. But it really basically helps you to manage your inventory of your tickets or the events that you have access to. So how I know Baslow, I always tell you guys how I know my guests. So Baslow and I were in the trenches way back when in the New Jersey Nets days. I don't even know what year, but I don't want to say it out loud. I was in marketing. Baslow was in ticket sales. And folks, it was like selling ice to Eskimos. It was not the sexy Brooklyn Nets that you have now. No, no, no. This was the swamps of New Jersey. Like, no one wanted to come. There were every reason not to come. It was hard to get to. The game on the court wasn't exactly at its best.
Tough. It was tough. There were some dark moments.
But great moments with the team of people that we had to work with. And we'll get into this. But folks, one of the things that I wanted to say as we started, Baz, is that I was thinking back to it. Part of why I enjoyed my time there was that people like you and Dan Lefton and Freddie, who were, and many more who were in that ticketing side of things at the time, somehow I realized that you guys wanted me to help you. So, like, I know it sounds funny, but like a lot of times in the industry, like divisions can be siloed. So I was in marketing, you were in sales, but I remember like I would bring you crazy ass leads, ticket sales leads. But you always were like, yeah, sure, Sean, I'll have the conversation. Do you remember the guy who had like all these fancy cars, Hummers, all this stuff? And you were like, is he legit or is he kind of sketchy? I was like, I don't know, but he has money for tickets. But it made me feel like I was a part of your team. And it gave me more than just kind of like the marketing in itself that I was a part of. And that's so much of what I talk about with leadership as a sport and leadership athletes such as yourself. So I don't know if you have any kind of memories about that crazy time working together.
I do. I have lots of memories, you know, some very funny and, you know, some for a reality TV show someday. But, you know, I think back upon that time, Shauna, very, very fondly. I've had a couple experiences in my life, but probably the New Jersey Nets being the most pronounced of big time business challenges. You mentioned the headwinds we had. You know, not always the best performing teams on the court, although we did have some good ones, but we had some tough ones as well. You know, and an arena situation that was a challenge. And also one of the main headwinds was we told everybody we were leaving. And so it is hard to garner a lot of, you know, goodwill from your fan base when you tell them like, hey, come now, but, you know, we're going to go in a couple of years. So amidst all those headwinds, you know, one of my main takeaways is the harder the challenge, the more you learn. And particularly this sort of leadership as a sport concept is you're either going to sink or swim. And I think we really swam. I think we had an incredible amount of talent in that room. You think now of some of the names you've mentioned, we can mention more. You think of where those people are now at high level positions everywhere in college sports and professional sports and private equity. It's amazing. And, you know, these intense challenges were like, if you don't bring your best, there is no plan B. And there is no path to even modest success. It's almost like it's like a farm team or like it's one of these really low budget Major League Baseball teams where it's like there is no margin for error. Everybody has to bring their A game and do their best and do their role every single day because you will 100% chance you lose if you don't. Versus maybe higher budget teams, there's some margin for error. Listen, everybody in our lineup is good. If I have an off day, someone else will pick up the slack. So that's my main takeaway from New Jersey. Also, by the way, maybe harder to see in the moment, but you know, the leadership from the Brett Yormarks, the Freddies of the world, some days it felt great. Some days it felt like they were being hard on us. But I think given some distance, I see the wisdom a lot more now than even in the moment when, you know, you're in trouble or, you know, it's never good enough. I see the wisdom now.
It's so true. And one thing I talk about that literally arena of the basketball arena that we were selling tickets to and marketing, you literally saw the results every night. So like, it's not like, oh, no one was going to really know if people were slacking off in the ticket sales department or who were, you know, like thing. It's the empty seats and the manufacturing of full seats that we, you know, needed to do at times. I mean, it was, to your point, it was such a challenge. And again, like, I think because of the leaders that we had, Matt Pizarris, Joe Stetson was involved. I mean, again, just as you said, people who are just like killing it in their careers. But it was always that we came together and that element of like, we're going to win together, because to your point, or we're going to lose together. And folks, if you're not that familiar with the sports industry, I literally would be like grateful that I would come back to my desk every day. I thought someone else was going to maybe be seated in it because it's so competitive. You know, it is, you're not only wanting to fill the arena and to work together as a team, you also want to keep your job.
Yeah. I also think, and it's brought on a concept that's helped me a little later in life, Shauna, is a little bit of irrational confidence and a little bit of just a refuse to lose mentality. Listen, there are most times, you know, you're in a pretty good situation, could get better, could get worse, and you're doing the best you can. There are some times where you're just, I'm backed in a corner, things are pretty tough. It is hard to like rationally see your way through to the light. And you just gotta kind of have some confidence in yourself and in your teammates. Like, this is gonna happen. Honestly, I don't know how it's gonna happen. We're gonna try a lot of things, but like the talent and the will of this team is gonna get it done because, like, there's not a good faith business plan that right now that anybody would be like, yeah, that checks out. You know, you just gotta believe in yourself, work as hard as you can, and then it just kind of does open up if you just keep grinding.
Keep at it. Yeah. And that's one of the things I was thinking about you and like your journey that has been, as I've watched from afar, it's been remarkable, not surprising at all, because of, again, like hard work and that ability to see possibility that it's going to pay off. You know, and we talk about you're in the role now of CEO and owner of Concierge Live. Like, you started in ticket sales. And you made your way up. You know, when we left each other, you were in a leadership seat in ticket sales at the time, New Jersey Nets. But again, it's been remarkable to watch what you've done with your career. So can you just give us a kind of walk us through kind of where you went from that point, you know, from the Nets ticket sales days to growing your career?
Yeah, sure. I'll give you the short version and then happy to sort of have any follow-ups. But when I graduated from college, I started in the inside sales or sort of telemarketing department, actually at the Cleveland Cavaliers. I met the Cavs through, the NBA used to have a job fair and they recommended the Cavs. Listen, literally the worst basketball team in the league at that point, but they really recommended, hey, the leadership, particularly in the ticket sales department, was known to be the best and known to really invest in developing young sellers. So I went there. And I, you know, one of the best decisions in my life of meeting people like Chet Estes, Mike Andreyko, Doug Dawson, again, a different organization, but like you talk about those people, those are all major executives at big time sports organizations now. So I was very lucky to go there, be trained on how to sell, be sent out into the world to, you know, try with good guidance, but, you know, try to learn. And I did. I was there for a couple of years. And then at that point, Bruce Ratner bought the then New Jersey Nets. He hired Brett Yormark to be the CEO. Brett Yormark brought in a lot of new people from a lot of new places. I was one of them, one of the lucky ones. And I ran one of our couple of ticket sales staffs at that point. And then I was at the Nets, both the New Jersey Nets and the Brooklyn Nets, for 14 years as, you know, a mid-level sales manager, then a higher level sales manager, then running the ticket sales department. Then, you know, I ended as executive vice president and chief strategy officer, and was very fortunate to be part of the executive team that moved the New Jersey Nets to Brooklyn and build the Barclays Center. Not a huge architect myself, but I did help, you know, sort of draft some of the business planning that went into it. And then from there, I went to a company called On Location Experiences, which is now owned by Endeavor and the NFL. At that point, when I joined, it was owned by two private equity companies, Redbird Capital and Brewerton Capital, in partnership with the NFL. Our main business was the NFL has four tentpole events, the biggest one being the Super Bowl. And it was a 360-degree sort of hospitality experience that we were offering for all those tentpole events. Since then, they've layered in all kinds of events. The Olympics, they have the World Cup, NCAA Final Four. I mean, it is a massive hospitality company now. And then through that company, and really through the private equity sponsors of that company, I met my current partner and owner of Concierge Live. We had some conversations about the sort of future of this company. And I was at a point in my life, I think, where I'd worked for big companies. And really enjoyed it, but wanted to see if like I personally could be the lead operator of a company. And he and I became very good friends, which I want to talk about in a second. And then I've been running Concierge Live for about 5.5 years now. And then I guess the coming back to it is one of the things I'm learning, and I know this is all going to be about leadership, is trusting in the people you work with and really getting a sense of like, who is the person I'm partnering with or who is my boss? What are their intentions with me? If those intentions are, everything is hard work and you got to produce for that person, but does this person want to invest in me? Is this person invested in my future? Or am I kind of a cog in the wheel and a replaceable part? And like this person's trying to use my work almost exclusively to like sort of better themselves. That is the fundamental takeaway of my entire career at this point, is find good leaders to work for, try to become one yourself, but find good leaders to work for. And that's the best way to sort of learn and become your own leader.
Yeah. Which actually really reflects you being coachable because what you said is like, you're going to work for them and learn from them. And here, look, as you said, sometimes we had leaders who at times we were, I don't know, I'll use the word intimidated by, or we had challenges with. But, you know, I really do believe like how much I learn from people both like saying, oh, I want to do that, or like, oh, hell no, I am not going to do that. So, you know, really that, but that takes conscious effort, I think, to observe those things. You weren't just, you know, cranking out calls and that kind of, you were actually had your head up observing, learning, taking that in, which is why I talk about this being so much of like, it starts within us. You made that choice to do that every day that you showed up, because you knew it would make you better for yourself, better for your teammates, better for the people who were in your care. So,
I totally agree. I echo everything you said. I got to say one, when you're talking about leadership, one, regret's not the right word, but one, if I had to go back, one change I would make would be having more jobs. You know, when I was initially working, I was hoping to, and the people I admired worked within one organization too, but like they really worked their way up the ladder and at some point ran the organization, which I think is, by the way, an incredible path. From my own experience, though, if I had to go back, I would have worked for more leaders. Because I think my leadership style is kind of a mosaic of all the people that I've worked for, you know, with a little bit of a dash of my own personality. And it would be cool to have, you know, more chapters in my own book to work from, because I've, you know, the people I did work for, I've been very lucky and I sort of emulate a lot of what they do. And if I could have even more, I honestly think that would be better now as a, you know, as an executive in their fill in the blank 40s.
Yeah, it's such a great point. And I think it's one good is good to raise, because that is a question. Do I stay longer? Have I stayed too long? Or you'll hear people say, oh, that person was a job hopper. Don't hire them. They've gone to too many places. So I really think to your point, it comes down to, as people who are listening to this, it's like, consider that. Do you, you know, if you are able to get exposed to more people as leaders, you know, what could you benefit from that? And that is a reason to change. I also think, like, as long as you have a story to tell about the moves you made, by the way, I'm just saying on the job hopping thing, as long as you have a story to tell, if you have a why and you make sense of it, it's fine.
Shauna, I totally agree. I also think perspective has changed. I think when
Totally.
we were working, you know, 20 years ago, I can't believe I'm saying that, the job hopper concept was a little bit more poorly looked upon. I think now it's just sort of known that people have a lot of jobs and you're evaluating the person, not so much the paper. And I would be less concerned about it. But I think that's one of those things that did prevent me from being a little bolder and looking else what's out there is this perspective of maybe being a job hopper. And again, like things worked out fine, but like it, my advice to the, you know, the listeners would be bold, try new things, make yourself a little bit more uncomfortable than maybe makes sense. I think long-term you will appreciate it. I think in the short term, it will be scary, but I think long-term you'll be glad you did it.
It's a really great point. And I've been thinking so much about that recently, about leaning into uncertainty, embracing it, that to your point, most of that we do, or, you know, especially if you're going to be someone who's going to be bold and be courageous about these choices you make, there's never really an I'm ready time. So you do jump and you do build your wings. And we don't have this crystal ball to say, I know for certain what's going to happen. And you're just weighing a bunch of decisions. The more and more I think about it, I'm like, just make one and you'll figure it out. And then there'll be another decision that you need to figure it out. You know, I just kind of, if we do that, then it's less of the analysis paralysis and the insecurity that can come along with that.
Totally, Shauna. I also think I did this. I imagine you do this too. You evaluate your future in a little bit of black and white. Like, is this the right option? Is this the wrong option? Is this going to work out well? Is this not going to work out well? The reality is they're all spectrums of like, hey, you know, worst case scenario, it's a 4 out of 10, best case scenario, it's an 8 out of 10. And that's what I'm saying. I just think both the upside and the downside aren't as high. So push yourself to be uncomfortable a little bit, push yourself to be bold. It just makes for a cooler life too.
Very true. And one of the things that I have always appreciated about you, and I'm saying this a bit to the audience who doesn't know him beyond the 20 minutes that we've been on, is that throughout our time of knowing each other over all those 20 some years, it's this, you always show up in a really authentic way, and I appreciate it. And you've always been the same wonderful human. Again, I think that takes some conscious effort because there's a lot of shit that happens and there's a lot of choices that you make along the way. But I, you know, again, I like to have people on who people can see, hey, they chose, they are, again, in the actions that they're taking to be a little different, to defy some stereotypes that are out there. So I also feel really fortunate. I think I was saying this to Freddie recently about how when I was coming up with you all, I was one of the only women.
Yes.
And people like Laura Lefton, who was killing it in the NFL, and Paige Pope, and these amazing women. Here's the thing. I feel really grateful that you all treated me authentically. You accepted me for who I was. I was a little quirky, folks. Not that I'm not quirky at all now. But, you know, again, I didn't experience some of the things that a lot of other women did in that time. So anyway, that's my public thanks to you and the people who are part of that team for, you know, my experience.
Listen, talent is talent. And I think it goes without saying, you know, I don't even think we have to go there. I'm just like, you know, the most capable people, the most talented, the hardest working people, the most ambitious people, those are the people sort of I want to be with. I appreciate your conversation about authenticity. And I know we might talk about it later. It is something I've learned as well. I think with you, I've always been authentic. And that's why we get along so well. I think if I looked in the mirror, not always with my staffs have I been authentic. And that's been a little bit of a learned behavior. When I was younger, oftentimes I was managing people that were older than me, more experienced than I was, and I was the most inauthentic version of myself. In an effort to bridge the gap of, hey, this is a little weird, you know, that I'm your boss and you've been working longer and have more life experience. You know, I was trying to be this older version of myself or harder, you know, like whatever I was trying to be, I was trying to manufacture this persona and this relationship to again, sort of bridge this age divide. And I want to kick myself a little bit because now, first of all, now I'm older than everybody that works for me. So I don't have to deal with it. But the more useful and thoughtful answer is people are drawn to authenticity. If you're funny, be funny. If you're serious, be serious. If you're quirky, be quirky. If you're whatever, fashionable, do that. People don't necessarily need to have a mirror of exactly who they are to connect or to respect you. People sniff out, and they did it with me, sniff out insecurity and inauthenticity, and it's repellent and people want to go the other way. If you are yourself, however that is, however that's expressed, people come around. And that's a long-term bond. And I got to tell you, I think I had to have a lot of failures, particularly as a manager. And maybe even just like, I got nothing else. Like, I'm just going to be myself because I'm worn out or I don't have any other characters to play. It's something I learned sort of, you know, in my 30s that now is like, that's my only way going forward is I am who I am. And, you know. Most people work with it, you know, and I think over time people respect it. And listen, the older I get, people are intellectually interested. They want to meet different types of people. I'm a high energy, dad jokey kind of person. And listen, it's an acquired taste. People get onto it, get on board over time.
This self-observation is so amazing. It's really true. Like, I think back to that and I want to kick myself because I didn't play the game very well. Meaning at that time in the game of inner office friendships and inner office relationships and going to lunch with people, because I don't know, for whatever reason, I didn't play that. And I woulda, shoulda, coulda. And I don't know, I just wanted to sit at my computer and bang stuff out of my computer. Freddie says there was smoke coming out of my computer. But, you know, it's like we do have these things that we look back to. And I do appreciate we did have an authentic relationship and bond. That's why we're still talk to this day, and not all the time, but every time we do interact, it's like, hey, old friend, new friend, not old. We're not old. You know, and one thing that I think was also a really helpful trait to your point about you being, he's called it dad jokey and stuff like that. You have an optimism about yourself to some of the stuff you were talking about earlier. Somehow we're going to find a way to figure it out and get it done. You have this even keeled way you always have, folks. I would be panicking about something or completely pissed off. Do you remember the time, I won't say the person, that I lost it on a ticket sales guy? He probably worked for you. I lost it, folks. It was not a good thing. Anyway, but you came to me, I remember afterward, you're kind of like, hey, let's move on. Let's do these things. But I do think, like, to your point, you were able to be your authentic self and really shine as you continue to grow. And I've always really appreciated it. So,
well, that's very nice of you to say. And again, it's paid dividends. And it's a learned behavior, weirdly to say, but it's paid dividends going forward. Speaking of, can we have Shauna? I know it's not on the show sheet. Can we have like Shauna Corner for 2 seconds?
Oh my God, please. Shauna Corner.
About you and how, talk about authentic, somebody that is incredibly hardworking, somebody's mind that never turns off. And I've never met anybody. I mean, you're a 10 out of 10 passionate about literally everything that I care about. And just, again, someone who has been a longtime friend, and you're right, there are sometimes gaps between when we connect again, but just knowing that's you and it's never going to change. And it's such a standout personality in my life. And I think it's so cool. And again, if we're talking about leadership, different leadership styles, different personality styles, it is an incredible example of authenticity. I guarantee that it has driven a lot of your success. And I would just, for anybody that's listening, I would use it both as a juxtaposition of there are lots of ways to sort of pursue your path, but like in all cases, be your authentic self. Because I think if either of us, again, we're trying to long-term trying to play a character that wasn't us, A, I don't know that we would be where we are today. And B, I guarantee we wouldn't be happy. Another part of it. I mean, I you know, a lot of these interviews, you know, about her career success or whatever, but the unspoken part goes like, is it fulfilling? Like, are you happy? Because getting a title or some of the income that you get, if you're not happy about it, it doesn't do a whole lot for you. So anyways, my little Shauna Corner.
If Thank you so much. I don't even know what to say other than just thank you so much. Yeah, and it's really funny, the part about being your authentic self. It is totally how you show up in every way. So like sometimes you have said to me like, oh, that's totally on brand for Shauna. You can truly be your authentic self. And that really is the difference between kind of like surviving in a role within an organization or thriving. So anyway, just a really helpful conversation about authenticity. You know, and the part you, again, like you were a young leader, and I really appreciate the fact that, you know, the way you kind of had to do that manufacturing given the circumstances, but it does show your adaptability and your resilience, you know, to make it through. And it's just so awesome. But as you've done all this, you've spent so much time in ticket sales. And, but I mean, gosh, there's been such a technical transformation.
Yes.
Know what Dick is. I kind of want to talk about this briefly because I do want to get into more about Concierge Live and what you all are doing. So give us kind of a look at where what you're seeing in ticketing today and then how you're working with that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, at a high level, the ticket industry is evolving at an ever rapid pace. There are so many new players in the space. And there's just profound change that's happening. I mean, when we all started, a ticket was sort of just, it was literally that. It was an entry mechanism to get into a sport or entertainment event. Now it's a million things. I mean, now it's that entry gateway. It's also oftentimes your pass to get food or to get other access to other clubs. And there's also just a lot of data exchange that's happening as well. The teams, not only do they want the income and the goodwill of having you buy a ticket and then scan in at the game, but they want to know more about you. They want to be able to optimize the experience that you do have. They want to figure out ways that keep you coming back. And I just think, just like everything kind of in all commerce in life right now, sort of the data ecosystem is becoming a really big part of sort of the ticketing space. So I find that really, really fascinating. And then sort of less top line, you know, there's still the ecosystem of venues and fans and corporate buyers and suites and premium tickets and whatever. But within that ecosystem now, which used to be a little bit more bilateral, now there are all these softwares like Concierge Live of filling a need. In our case, we fill a need of, we mostly have corporate customers, big banks, big insurance companies, big tech companies, big auto dealerships, you name it, own these large ticket portfolios. And when you own these large ticket portfolios, you end up having some pain points. How do I keep track of all these tickets? How do I get a sense of if they were used or what was the quality of usage? Did our tickets mostly go to the CEO or for client development, or did they mostly go to the janitor to take their kids? And obviously any balance of that is good, but if you're using, you really want to, corporate clients really want to evaluate, here's why this was our intention for purchasing these tickets. Did that become a reality, and want to be able to measure how successful a reality that was? And that's where our software comes in. We're basically a CRM for corporate clients to be able to manage and evaluate their tickets, manage the inventory. We're an internal request and approval portal. So if you're a big bank trying to request tickets internally, just trying to request tickets to take a client, oftentimes we are that portal, and sometimes you don't even know. We're a delivery mechanism for the tickets. And then one of the biggest things is, again, being able to produce these rich reports about amount of usage, quality of usage, that kind of thing. And it's been an incredible experience, and it's been so fun. This is a space that has a lot of green field. Although we have a lot of customers, and there are other softwares in the space that have some customers. I really think there are way, way, way more corporate clients that need a software like this that are still kind of doing it manually with spreadsheets and emails. So the excitement about the future and the innovation opportunities is exciting.
Yeah, it's such a great point, because I think that people don't necessarily know the benefits that you can get out of leveraging having access to those experience, but they don't actually know all the mechanics of it. Like you're saying, well, once you have them, well, how do you make sure they're used, and why would you do that? Or they just go in someone's, I was going to say drawer, but they're really, they're virtual now. They go into a folder and they don't, exactly. And they don't get used. it is just a really good point to, especially for listeners, that, you know, there is a complexity to it if you're not familiar with the ticketing space, but it truly actually helps so much to be able to leverage them. You know, how many times are people saying like they don't know what to give? Giving a gift of experience like that, that giving that memory to someone is, and then they go talk about it with someone else. And again, it elevates their status because they can say, oh, I was sitting at the box at whatever game. It just makes such a difference. You know, I think in trying to, because so much of my time gets spent actually in revenue growth. So when I'm out there selling and coaching and consulting on, you know, for how to, again, I like to say, like, what can they leverage? So, you know, I think it's a truly unique, again, experience or way of, you know, that you can, when you leverage them the right way.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I appreciate seeing that. And listen, I think it is totally understandable, particularly for big companies, to invest in these tickets, thinking in a very macro sense, hey, we can use these to really drive our business forward. I think in the moment when they're purchasing them, oftentimes woven into a bigger sponsorship, the thought of like, well, how are we going to actually execute and optimize these tickets? Maybe that's not on their mind in the moment. And so learning, hey, you know, this opportunity also comes with some pain points. That's where we come in. And it's been really fulfilling, by the way, also seeing clients that have these pain points, not being able to totally optimize their ticketing program, work with them, and then really smooth it out. It's a really symbiotic partnership that is genuinely very fulfilling.
Yeah, true. And so it's also leading me, as we're closing down our time together, I have one of the best in the business in sales is sitting right here with me. I just want to get some thoughts from you about any kind of either pitfalls or things you really encourage people to do as they're, you know, in sales. We probably hit on some of them, such as be authentic, you know, but I would just love for you to share some of, you know, anything you can with the audience related to sales.
Yeah. So you nailed it on the head. The first one is authenticity. Again, if you're funny, be funny. If you're not funny, don't try to be funny. If, you know, be whoever you are. So that's a lead one. The main pitfall in the tactical day-to-day is talking too much, right? When people think of salespeople, I mean, inevitably they think of car salespeople, which is offensive to all of us in sales. But when people think of it, they think of like Jerry Maguire. You know what I mean? This really like charismatic, talkative, I am going to like give you 30 minutes to look and I'm going to win you over. And the most successful people typically do a lot of listening. You know, if I'm having a half an hour business development conversation, a win, hey, what if I only talk for 5 minutes of it and they talk for 25 minutes? That is probably, from a tactical standpoint, the best thing you can do. Learning information from them, learning either if they have aspirations they don't have right now or they have pain points that need to be addressed. That information is the most successful thing you can do to be able to solve those problems. Just hearing yourself talk, A, it's not fulfilling for the other person, and B, you're not learning how you can help them. And then just the most obvious thing about this whole concept is like, people typically, person that talks the most in a conversation, like this podcast, I'm going to come away, I talked a lot, I'm going to come away being like, that was a great conversation, right? So I think people, when they participate a lot, they come away being like, hey, I really enjoyed that experience. Maybe I want more of that. I think when they're talked at for a half an hour, an hour, it's like, well, I don't know that I'm like dying to sign up for that again.
Such a great point. And it's a great point to part of why you do well and succeed as a leader and you're a leadership athlete. Because folks, when you are a leader, one of the best things that you can do is listen, say less, empower other people. Don't open every single meeting and tell everybody what's going to happen, because then they're predicting that they need to please you. So again, it's such a great point about, you know, listening in sales. Listening, I think, is the key there, you know, as well as in leadership. So before I let you go, Concierge Live, just want to go back to that for just 1 second. Who, if people are listening to this and they're like, oh, would I be a good client for them? Or can you give us a little bit more? You talked about like big corporate clients. Can you give us a little bit more about how people in the audience could think about, you know, perhaps working with you?
Yeah, sure. Again, you're typically thinking of really sports sponsors, naming rights sponsors, sponsors of club, luxury naming rights sponsors of various clubs within a venue. Typically embedded in those sponsorships are a lot of tickets. And those would be our ideal client. And also just sort of common sense, right? The big banks of the world, the big insurance companies of the world, the big tech companies in the world, any sort of mid to large size client that would do a lot of business entertainment, inevitably those are the clients that have a portfolio of sports tickets, and that's where we can support them.
Okay, got it. So that actually does go back to, I was going to ask you if you have internet. So I just want to thank you so much for joining today and for remaining a part of my life, my journey. You're awesome. Appreciate you. Is there any last takeaway you want to give to the audience?
No, listen, this was a wonderful conversation. I really appreciate it. Yes. One, there are bigger things in life than just work. I really am serious about A, the fulfillment that it brings you. Talk about two people that are like semi-workaholics and Shauna and Brian. Make sure it's fulfilling because you spend a lot of time doing it. And then secondly, the cool part is you make a lot of good friends along the way. And I think this conversation is representative of, you know, people that were sort of made to be together 20 years ago that are now just hanging out in a conversation like this. I think that's the special part of it.
Such a great point. Thank you so much today for your time, for your friendship, like I said. And everybody, thanks so much for joining. Have an awesome day.
Have a good one.